This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Maryland and Florida. Terps take on the Gators tonight. 7:30 pregame coverage at 6:30 right here on 105.7 The Fan. And let's preview tonight's matchup. Chris Harry, he covers the Gators for FloridaGators.com and joins us now. And Chris, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. Florida, the one seed in this region, and some say the best team in this tournament right now, or maybe arguably playing the best basketball. So for people around here who haven't watched them a whole lot, what makes Florida so good?
Well, obviously it starts with the trio of senior guards, Walter Clayton Jr., Will Richard on the wing, and Elijah Martin, the transfer from Florida Atlantic, where he was part of a mid-major program that did some remarkable things, one of the best Cinderella stories of NCAA tournament history a couple years ago. But also the fact that these guys, they navigated the toughest college basketball league of the last 20 years pretty impressively, and going 14-4, finishing second. They won the SEC tournament in dominant fashion, all three games by double figures. And, you know, you knocked out the champion last week. So that was going to be a tough out. It didn't really matter that they were an 8 seed. You guys probably watched some of that game.
Mm-hmm.
UConn didn't play like an 8 seed. You know, UConn didn't go into that thing thinking it was an 8 seed. So they're here. They deserve that 1 seed for the way they played in the Southeastern Conference. The teams that they beat Auburn on the road, one of the best wins in college basketball this season. But I absolutely think they're going to have their hands full tonight. Maryland is an outstanding team, as good a starting five as there is in the country. Should be a pretty good game.
Well, Chris, let's go back to that UConn game, because you can pretty much pencil Florida for 80 points every single game. They were held slightly under that total. You saw more turnovers than we're accustomed to seeing with Florida. What kept Florida off their game against the Huskies?
I'll tell you what, I think there was some luck involved also. I mean, there wasn't anything going Florida's way for, you know, 90% of that game. And, you know, you mentioned the turnovers. Florida turned it over 8 times in the first half, and UConn didn't score 1 point off any of those turnovers. UConn missed 21 three-pointers, and there were some wide-open ones. What happened, and if you look at what UConn does, the Dan Hurley, we can have a conversation about him if we want to. He is a hell of a coach, and they run some very sophisticated actions in the offensive half court. And, you know, they they beat Florida in a lot of ways in that way. So I don't know that Maryland does that. I think Maryland plays a lot closer to what Florida does, wants to play the game faster. I think they kind of try to set up dilemmas for defenses and then let guys go make plays. That's kind of what the Gators like to do. So I don't know how this matchup is going to shake out, but I think it's a little more of an even matchup in terms of style of play between the two teams.
As you think about this game and as you prepared for this game, how much do you think all of this bizarre stuff going on around the University of Maryland athletic programs right now, no AD, a coach who's got, you know, nine fingers and nine toes out the door, who aired all their public laundry on the way out, a bunch of kids who, let's face it, pretty much have no future at the University of Maryland beyond this game, if it's their last game, does any of that factor in to the equation for you tonight?
You know, to be honest with you, I was listening to a radio show up there earlier this morning, and I was surprised. I mean, the way it started coming in waves, I read some stories in the Washington Post, and then I heard the fans calling in, and you know, I don't get a sense of it out here. Mm-hmm. I'm here on site with the University of Maryland, okay? And, you know, he kind of played it off a little bit in the press conferences. The players, you know, I just think these guys compartmentalize mm-hmm. pretty well, and they don't get as jacked up about stuff like that as the fans do. Could it be a distraction? Absolutely. But I'm not behind those walls. I don't know what these guys are thinking. But I'm telling you, when the ball's tossed, are they really, really thinking about that? I know it's a bad look from the fan standpoint, what they're seeing. But I don't know how much it's going to. I don't know how much it's going to matter today on game day. It could move really fast and furiously if Maryland doesn't advance, obviously. But if they do, they got to deal with it again for 48 more hours with a chance to go to the Final Four. I think it's worth the pain, whatever if there even is any.
That's right? Going to be fun theater. We're talking to Chris Harry. It's Inside Access here on the Fan. Maryland, not a deep team. It seems like Florida is a deep team. Could depth be a factor in this one?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of Florida's main things that they want to do, try to get the game going as fast as possible. They are in the half court offensively. They're gonna want to work Derek Queen through as many ball screens as possible. And the way Florida plays, it's gonna be different than I think a lot of what Maryland has seen this season. And yes, they can send wave of players in, especially in the front court. I know those two guys up front, Queen and Reese, are outstanding players. Both of them averaged better than nine rebounds. The Gators have a lot of respect for those guys. But Florida has four dudes, man, who can really interchange each other and do some things. I think Queen can get an advantage on, let's say it's Alex Condon or Thomas Houck physically. But those guys are in great shape. The Maryland guys playing, you know, five guys to play 82% of the minutes since conference started. I think Florida is closer to around 70%, maybe even below that. But they'll want to get the game going up and down and see if they can create some mismatches that way and maybe create space and get some of three-pointers off for some of these guards that can really shoot it.
Walter Clayton Jr., he can really shoot it, and he was big for Florida down the stretch against UConn. He's their leading scorer on the season. Just talk to us about Clayton's season.
Well, I'll give you just – let's talk about his postseason. In the six games, the five games, two NCAA and the three SEC tournament games, 21.6 points. He's 47.8 from the floor. He's 51 from three-point. He's actually shooting better from the three-point line than he is from the two-point area, and 88% from the free-throw line. He's the straw that stirs the drink, obviously. The sexy storyline here for the locals, you know, people are calling him the college version of Stephen Curry. They were saying that on the CBS broadcast last week and what have you. But obviously he's not scoring 50 and 60 points in a game. But the guy gets his shot off whenever he wants to. You guys probably saw what he did down the stretch against UConn. A game, like I said, there was really nothing going their way. Walter Clayton kind of took the game over in the last, I think he scored 12 points in the last 8 minutes. Had just two monumental three-pointers, both of them well-guarded. he'll do that. He's got logo range against Auburn. He hit five with his heels on the Auburn logo in that game. So he's unafraid to fail. And he is, you know, you look at it right now, he may be the sexiest player left in the NCAA tournament besides perhaps Cooper Flagg. But he's really an interesting story because, you know, no one recruited him in the state of Florida, and here he is back for his senior year. He's, believe it or not, this is a stat, he's the first-team All-American in University of Florida basketball history. Mm. You think of those Billy Donovan teams, they never had one. And Walter Clayton's the very first one.
So what gives you the most pause about this game? Like, what you had to rank your two or three biggest concerns on, you know, how things could get a little off the rails for a Gators team that's around a seven-point favorite?
Yeah, I would think the if Maryland can get those shooters, those guys over 40%, yeah. What is it, their backcourt, it's 43, 40, and 37. Yep. If they get open looks like UConn got, that can be a problem because all of a sudden you're the one seed and you've given up seven or eight threes in the first half, and now you got a whole arena against you because, you know, you're the favorite. Yep. That concerns me. The ball security concerns me a little bit. But Walter Clayton is not a pure point guard. He's a very good combo guard. He made a few uncharacteristic turnovers last week, but so did several other players on the team. But like I said, when you make eight in a half and the other team doesn't score off any of them, I think that's lucky. So if I'm Maryland, you know, maybe you're devising some stuff to kind of force Walter Clayton. You're going to blitz him, force him to make some passes, get in the passing lane, see if there's any steals like that. I know Maryland's an elite defense, sixth in the country, KenPom. So that would be something, if I'm from Maryland side, I would be looking into for sure.
Okay, Chris, Harry, before we let you go, I assume you think Florida's advancing. Is it close game? How do you see this one?
Yeah, I think it's a game that's decided in the last, after the under media timeout. I'd be surprised if it was any kind of a lopsided affair. I know Florida has won 25 games this season by double figures. I don't think this one will be. If it does get that way and it's a little weird, maybe there is some legitimacy to the point you brought up about what's going on behind the scenes with Maryland, but I don't really think that's going to. I think Maryland's really, really good, and it's going to be a good game here.
Chris Harry, FloridaGators.com is where you can find him. Chris, thank you so much for your time. Enjoy the game.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. Bye.
Thank you.
Coming up next, it's T-Bone time. TMI, looks like the Oriole game's in a delay in a dome, so that's bizarre. But it's what 3:07 was supposed to be first pitch. Alas, T-Bone time, TMI with TIM, floor is yours.
Maybe Bob was on to something about
it. Yeah, he knows, man. Start.
Haney knows. Tony Tater's getting his silver slugger.
Nice.
It's been a while, but I had to unfortunately get a new washer and dryer. But when when I was downstairs, I noticed when I was moving the old one out.
Bone simulator?
The bone simulator.
And cobwebs on it.
I thought, you know what?
I thought it went the way of bone overdrive. I didn't even know it was still alive.
Let's run these couple of games in March and the month of April for the Orioles through the simulator. We're going to play the outcomes next.
It's T-Bone time, TMI with TIM, and the floor is yours.
It's been a while since we had a visit from the bone simulator.
Thought you lost it.
It was lost behind my old washer and dryer, and I found it. I rediscovered it over the weekend when I got the new ones in. So I thought, you know what, self, let's run the first month through the simulator. And I can't stress this enough. This has nothing to do with me.
Right.
I don't have
science.
I have no editorial control over any of this. It spits it out, and I read exactly what is on the sheet of paper. Has the Orioles starting out 0-3, gentlemen. 0-3. They lose today on a walk-off home run to Anthony Santander.
Whoa,
Felix
taters.
Bautista. Santander screaming towards the Orioles dugout. Expletives at Mike Elias, apparently. That's what the bone simulator
says. Bone simulator says Elias is in the dugout.
Elias is in the stands towards the dugout, but he's in the stands like he typically is.
Yeah.
Second game. They lose 6-2. Charlie Morton pulled after an inning and two-thirds due to tricep soreness.
Wow.
Placed on the 15-day IL. Then the third game, they lose 6-3. Mean Dean Kramer on the mound. Gives up 5 unearned runs.
Let me guess. Jackson Holliday is the culprit.
Jackson Holliday and Jordan Westberg combined for three errors. Mean Dean popped off postgame saying, this is the quote that the Bone Simulator printed out.
Wow.
I can only control what I can control, and that is throw strikes. I can't control the lineup and who plays where. That's for the guys upstairs.
Preach, Mean Dean.
That was Mean Dean in the Bone Simulator, not real. Then the O's pick up their first win. Final game of the series, 5-2. Sagano, he threw inside to Vladdy multiple times in Vladdy's first at-bat. Then he plunks him in his second at-bat, causing the benches to clear.
Wow.
Sagano was ready to throw hands in his MLB debut, but Jackson Holliday, he had to restrain him. Cooler heads prevailed. Sagano ended up settling in, though, just five innings. Allowed two earned runs.
They thought Sagano was throwing at him at 88 miles an hour.
Yes, that's what that is. Sagano was ready to throw hands. He had to be restrained.
Wow.
Slim Povich.
I don't think they fight in Japan. I've never
this
seen Japanese
Japan,
brawl.
That's why he left.
This ain't Japan.
It's like, I want to fight.
That's why he left at age 36.
That's right. It's like, I need a fight.
Orioles win their home opener 3-0. Slim Povich, 5 2/3, scoreless.
Does this happen on Monday or Tuesday for my planning purposes?
This is Monday.
They get the game in Monday.
He comes out to Life in the Fast Lane. That is his
forecast. Where did that come from? He wanted to find something I hate even more than Billy Joel?
He confesses,
I thought it was going to be Piano Man.
He confesses his love of the Eagles.
No, wait. First of all.
Wow.
First of all, Bone Simulator, Slim Shady won the poll. So it should be Slim Shady. Well,
the Bone Simulator has Slim going rogue. What do you want me to say? They lose the second game.
A lot going on with the starting pitching staff first week of the season.
They lose the second game to the Red Sox, but come back, win a crazy one, 8-7 in the finale. Alex Bregman boots a ball, has throwing error while playing third base in the bottom of the ninth that led to an Orioles walk-off win. Tristan Casas... After the game, said, quote, it's a shame we didn't have the best third baseman in the field today. Otherwise, we would have won the series.
Wow.
I love that kid. That crazy kid. Can I ask you a question?
What?
At any point during the Red Sox-O's series, does Tyler O'Neill walk to the plate with the 125-pound dumbbells that the Red Sox wouldn't let him use?
110s.
And say, this is for you?
No.
Breeslow,
Flexin.
This is what you get.
They took 2 of 3 against the Royals. They took 2 of 3 against the D-backs. Bone Simulator has Gunnar Henderson returning to the lineup April 9th.
Yes. He's going to be in the lineup tomorrow.
What? Yeah. For the O's.
Oh, okay.
For the O's.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
This isn't the Norfolk
Dude,
Simulator.
Come on, man. He's doing
the
major
Norfolk
leagues.
Simulator? Then he goes 2 for 4 there. Then we get to the orange-on-orange uniform combination.
Looking forward
Orioles
to that.
Got demolished 15-2. Fans begin to wonder if the combo is a jinx, like the City Connect uniform. Charlie Morton comes back pretty soon after the 15-day IL, April 13th. Then he goes 5 innings, 1 earned run in his return from the IL. They get swept by the Guardians, but in the series finale, the condiment race, Mustard blows out his ACL. In the hot dog
race. It's going around.
Yes. Then the very next day, the weirdness continues. Orioles beat the Reds 7-6. Brandon Hyde arrives 2 innings into the game.
Oh, traffic.
It's kind of his thing. Very on brand.
Because of a car accident caused by hundreds of drones flying downtown Baltimore. So, Brandon Hyde, he got stuck there.
Drones?
Drones. Mm. They're back. It's been a while since they've been in the news. Then, a couple days later, Sir Anthony Dominguez allows 3 earned runs in the 8th inning, took the loss to the Reds 6-4. Then they blow out the Nats. Second game, they lose to the Nats 4-2. Teddy Roosevelt in the president race, he blows out his Achilles.
Wow.
Had to get pulled out. So you're talking about two mascots.
I don't know what's more dangerous, being a professional baseball pitcher these days or being a mascot.
I don't know. Adley goes 4 for 4 the next day as the Orioles win the series over the Nats. Triple shy of the cycle. Tyler O'Neill hits a go-ahead 3-run homer.
Yeah, he does.
April 27th at the Tigers. O's win that one 6-5, but lose the series. Then, April 28th, we know that Mean Dean had some history with the Yankees last year with Juan Soto. He plunks Aaron Judge in the fourth inning.
Gotta do what you gotta
after
do.
Throwing inside multiple times in the first
inning. They didn't let Sagano do it again?
Judge storms the mound. Mean Dean and him get in a scuffle. Judge is suspended. 4 games. Mean Dean gets suspended. 10.
Wow.
That's so not fair.
Misses two, that's not fair.
Well, Judge stormed the mound. Then Kyle Gibson makes his debut.
I don't know that made it better, but he
storms the mound.
Just go with it.
Yeah. And then Kyle Gibson makes his debut April 30th. Goes 2 2/3, allows 3 homers.
Wow.
7 earned runs to the Yankees. Orioles head into May with a 16-15 record.
I
would take that.
16-15.
It could be worse.
Could be better.
I'd sign up for that right now.
Now, I'll explain the way the standings work one day.
It's a tricky business.
Yeah, 16-15.
Might need 2 segments.
Not necessarily as good as, say, 18-13. That's better. Coming up next, Purple Rain in the forecast. And there are a few old friends of the Ravens that are available. Could help this Ravens defense. What about a reunion for the Ravens? Who are these guys and who would you like back? Tune in next, Purple Rain, here on The Fan.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
We've talked about the Ravens maybe making some smaller moves. They did already with signing Awuzie to a 1-year deal, the corner. But there are a few guys on the market that, and we've discussed these guys before, all former Ravens, Matthew Judon, Calais Campbell, Za'Darius Smith, all available, all guys that we think are on the Ravens radar in some form or fashion. If you could only pick one, who would you have a reunion with? Jason.
I think I would go Judon is what I talked myself into, and it's multifaceted. That you could convince me on an interior guy or with the versatility that a Za'Darius provides or a Calais, but this draft is so loaded with those kind of guys. And I think they can draft multiple D tackles in the mid rounds and find guys who are going to contribute immediately. And I trust them to evaluate that position and find value in that position, and they've done it repeatedly. It doesn't happen on the edge.
No, it does not.
They just don't. It doesn't happen. I mean, we were sitting here yesterday talking about Owe quite a bit on the show and how to evaluate that selection, but none of us want him here on a real contract.
No.
A second go-around, right? I mean, that was a significant pick for them. They have tried to find young pass rush in a bunch of different ways, buying low on hurt guys, doing it all based off of projection, going the analytical route, sacks don't matter. Like, we've heard it all. It's a blind spot. It's more of a lingering blind spot for them now than receiver has proven to be.
They have somehow finished first and second in the league in sacks the last 2 years.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
It's not planning out in the playoffs.
No.
So, I think somebody who's been there, done that, who you can keep on a rotation. And again, I don't think it should be pie in the sky to say Calais and Judon. But I think I could see a scenario where we're sitting here the day after the draft and they've drafted a couple of D linemen and maybe they've taken a shot at an edge guy in the later rounds. But I could see us looking at that room saying, man, what would happen if Van Noy did get hurt this year? Like, do we think Owe's stepping up? Like, do we have any faith in Ajabo? Like, do they need another veteran edge presence? So I went Judon. You could, like, again, I'm not saying it's the thing it's not a hill I'm going to die on. Mm-hmm. I think any of these guys could help them. But Za'Darius Smith, I just wonder about is he cooked physically? And I know Judon's had some injuries, but it's kind of been different stuff. And Calais on a pitch count? Absolutely. He could help them, but I think the way they like drafting D linemen and as loaded with them as this draft is and as many picks as they have in the mid rounds, that's why I went with sort of the more pure edge guy.
Yeah, I'm torn between Judon and Za'Darius, so I guess being contrarian, I'll go Za'Darius here, and he's coming off a solid year. He had 9 sacks, 17 quarterback hits, and he's hit the post the past 3 years since he's turned 30. He's only missed two games over the past 3 years, and his ability to rush from the outside, from the inside, there's a ton of value there. He knows this division, having played in Baltimore, having played in Cleveland as well. I think he's a player that could be really, really useful for him. But Judon, I think I'm very torn between the two. I'll give the slight edge to Zadarius.
So it's funny because we didn't plan this out. I went Calais because I thought Calais is coming off a great year.
Yep.
And I am a little worried about the other two guys being cooked. Like, and obviously, I know going in, Calais has to be on a pitch count. I know it's not on field, but I think Calais is leadership in that locker room could matter as well. So that I lean Calais in this. And yes, well, you could sign two of them, but the exercise was just one.
Yes.
And we put this question out to the people in a poll. I1057 the fan on Twitter. Hey, Ravens Flock, if the Ravens could facilitate a reunion with one former defensive player, which one would you choose? Matt Judon, 40.2%, Calais, 32.9%, and Zadarius, 26.8%.
These are guys. Jason, just to clarify, none of these guys are breaking the bank at this point in their careers.
I mean, I don't know if
all
any
three
of them
are one-year deals,
$5 or $6 million.
Yeah. Nobody's getting a multi-year deal.
Still, look, I'm sure they're going to want some upside protection, and there'll be some. You know, if one of them has a 9-10 sack season, they're going to want some incentives in there, and their incentives you'd be happy to pay, or playing time. They got themselves in trouble with the playing time incentives with Calais the last time around, though. Because he wanted to play more,
and he
got paid more, and they played him too much, and he ran out of gas. I would almost give him incentives based on wins.
De-escalation.
Like that.
Yeah. He had a perfect rotation in Miami, for what it's worth. They played him just the right amount.
Yes, they did. And I think the Ravens are every bit as capable of doing that as well. It was just as cheap as the Wells one, Volpe. Yeah.
Sorry,
like,
Yankee
literally the same spot, wind-aided. Yeah. About a half a foot over their little cheapy wall in right field with somebody reaching out to try to...
It was really rich that they criticized the Orioles ballpark for the first fence when that...
This home
right
run
field is such
might
a joke
be,
there.
Might be even more lame than the one Wells hit
to start
the game.
Well, the Wells, it was only a homer in Yankee Stadium.
Yes.
That was the
well,
only
and look
one.
At this one.
Yeah.
This is the same thing. Somebody reaching out. You're not even sure if it made it over the little wall. Wee little Volpe got it just barely over there.
He didn't even get it off the sweet spot.
It was pop-up.
Yeah.
It's a pop-up anywhere else.
Yeah.
But you could tell the wind's blowing that way, and good for him, I guess.
You love Volpe.
Yeah, you are a big Volpe guy.
Yeah.
You're a big,
like, it's the same thing.
Yeah, that is a joke.
Yeah, right. You're a big Volpe guy.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
You think anybody in America would talk about Volpe if you played for the Milwaukee Brewers?
No. Well, people in Milwaukee would.
That's bad.
And
a good point.
No, they'd be talking about Joey Ortiz. They wouldn't be talking about
last
him.
I checked, Milwaukee is in America.
They'd be talking about my guy, Joey Ortiz.
Yeah. They could talk about both. There's time for both.
They wouldn't want to.
I think they like their guys. I think
Orioles game finally started.
Yeah, well, there was a half hour delay.
And if you're listening to us, you probably don't care.
Yeah. Bobster got a tip.
Yeah.
It's Canadian time.
It's one of those weird things where it was a planned delay because obviously Bob knew. I walk in and he's like, game's not starting until 3:37.
Everything said 3:07.
Everything said 3:07. I thought he was screwing with me.
I forgot to make this bet, but we'll see if I was right.
But the game has started. Colton Cowser is leading off. He's behind 1-2. I'm not doing play-by-play, but I only bring that up because Jason thinks he's going to strike out. That's the only reason I bring said thing up. But go to IA1057 The Fan on Twitter to vote on the poll, which will be up until tomorrow. You can also vote on the Kevin Willard poll. Obviously, we'll be talking about that all day long. Coming up next, we continue talking Ravens, and things have gone quiet on the Justin Tucker conversation. He's still a member of the Ravens. So when OTAs happen,
they're around the corner.
Yeah, it's right after the draft, so it's a little over a month away. Is Justin Tucker just going to show up for OTAs? We'll discuss next here on The Fan.
Yeah, well, sure. It's, every position's important. We're going to look at every single position, but certainly different years you look at different positions. We're looking at kickers. I mean, we're looking at a lot of positions. We're looking at every position, but I'd say the kicker position would have been a priority no matter what because, you know, Justin's our kicker. We love him, and I expect him, would have, you know, always expected him to keep going forever, but nobody goes forever. So we've got to look at every position like we do.
John Harbaugh reminding us that nothing lasts forever. And Justin Tucker, he's a 36-year-old kicker who is he's going through a little something this offseason, and the NFL is investigating his situation with the massage therapist. Its investigation is ongoing. The draft's a month away, and then after that, it's OTA's time. So is Justin Tucker, he's still part of this football team. Is he just going to show up for OTAs?
I mean, he would have nothing contractually precluding him from doing
no.
it. Now, is he about that smoke? I don't know. To this point, he's been nothing but defiant,
yes.
right, in the face of this. He's refused to answer real questions. He put out a statement and then searched to find a sympathetic media outlet that would be willing to propagate his statement without any pushback, right? So that's what we've gotten from him. Hasn't sued anybody.
Not yet.
But he really hasn't backed down. So he may be of the mind that I'm employed. I'm a kicker. This is what I do. This is what I'm going to do. Now, do they have private meetings with him, Sashi, the owner, whoever, and say, hey, we need you, you know, to stay away? I mean, they could, and I wouldn't think he would force the issue.
No.
But he's certainly in a very different point in his career than any of us could have really seen coming. And I do wonder if he kind of gets sort of in that headspace of, I don't give a bleep.
Mm-hmm.
And just tries to pretend like nothing's going on here and wants to be out on the backfields working and kicking and doing everything else once the media starts getting back in there and once they start their football activities up. I would assume they do whatever they could to nip it in the bud, but like if he wakes up with a spur up his backside one day and just decides he wants to do it, wouldn't that be something? I mean, you do. I mean, that's kind of the risk you run when you let stuff like this just fester and
sure.
pretend it's not happening. Right, and hide behind the shield and say the league's looking into it. Because we know there's no chance in hell that this is anything close to resolved by the time OTA start, let alone the preseason.
I would be shocked if he was there. Because I would think that the team would tell him to stay home, to avoid that distraction. And then for him to defy that after them essentially standing, not even essentially, standing by him, by not releasing him during all of this. It's a joke that he's even on this football team still and that they are hiding behind the shield. So if he were to show up after them telling him not to, geez. That...
I have a couple of predictions. They're not going to ask him, and this is my opinion for what it's worth. They're going to tell him to stay home pending the result of the NFL investigation for the OTAs. Now, could he? I don't know why. He doesn't seem like the kind of guy that's going to defy.
I would be shocked.
The second thing is, I don't think he ever steps foot in that building again as a player. Like you two are shocked he's still here, but I do not think he steps in that building again as a player.
Well, if he doesn't step in there as a player, was he ever stepping in there?
At some point, years down the road, he's like he goes in the Ring of Honor or something as a football player. Terrell Suggs in the Ring of Honor. Go Google him.
Oh, I know, but yeah, I just wonder. He's all lawyered up. I mean, I don't know. Part of me just wonders. Like, I don't know. Would he rather be in this situation right now, or would he rather be a free agent?
I also think, to your point,
like, what if he wants to be cut, but they don't want to cut him? Could he force, like, hey,
yes.
I'm going to show up to your facility.
Yes.
You know what I mean? I don't want to just be stuck under your thumb until this happens. Now, his lawyers are probably telling him, is anybody else going to sign you until the NFL thing comes out? But I don't know.
Yeah, I think he could force
maybe there's part of him that eventually just gets a little antsy and says, you know what? I don't want to play by your rules. Why don't you just cut me free and we'll see where this goes?
If he does, that's exactly what happens. If he forces the issue, they release him. He's not walking in that building. They release him.
That would be something for him to force the issue. Who's going to sign
he's
him?
He's clearly, nobody. Though, like a
he's
little off his rocker.
Oh,
like he's a megalomaniac. He thinks he's way more. Justin Tucker's more infatuated with Justin Tucker than anybody else on the planet's infatuated with Justin Tucker. We certainly now have that portal into his brain. Justin Tucker thinks he's a really big deal.
Yes.
Dude, take all the off the field stuff off the equation. He's coming off the worst season of his. He was one of the worst kickers in football last year, and he's age 36. Then you throw the off the field stuff in.
Who's touching that?
Bro, who puts out a statement like he puts out a statement in a situation like this? He's whacked in the head. He's a whack-a-doodle.
Yeah.
Quickly, Orioles do lead the Blue Jays. We're through 1-0. Adley Rutschman hit an absolute bomb, 436 feet. Full disclosure, Bone thought he got under it.
Killed by
under.
Yeah. It cleared the bullpen.
Yes.
I was rooting for the under. 15 rows.
I bet the under in the first inning.
436 feet to straightaway right. It was a home run in all 30 parks.
So if you were listening when the show started, I said Colton Cowles was going to strike out the first at bat. He did. I said Adley.
I also said he worked pitch the count. He did.
Owns these guys, and it's probably due for a homer.
So he did.
Now, we'll see if Vladdy homers and if Tony Tater's homers.
Zach Eflin, strong first inning.
Yes,
1-2-3, struck out Guerrero. So 1-0 Orioles. We're in the top of the second with huge sports day in town. Not only do you have the Orioles playing right now, but Terps and Florida at 7:30. You can hear that game beginning with pregame coverage right here on 105.7 The Fan. 6:30 is when pregame coverage starts, and coming up next here on the program, by the way, Jimmy Patsos will be in studio at 5 o'clock. Should Kevin Willard be even coaching this game? We'll explain next here on The Fan.